gentlemen, we're about to start the seminar. If you'd like to come around the front, people behind the blue canopies, if you cannot see, there's still room around the front here. There's still some shade. We're going to kick off in about a minute's time, so if you please file around the front of the blue canopies, there's still room. Thanks. Okay, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Pat Carroll, and welcome to another glorious Queensland Winter's Day, and I certainly hope you all are enjoying the day. The whole idea or the whole concept behind having a motivational seminar, ladies and gentlemen, is so that you can feel a little leave today feeling a little bit excited about what you are about to encounter tomorrow, but at the same time not feel nervous or anxious about what you're about to encounter. Today's seminar, ladies and gentlemen, is not about getting tips on diet, it's not about getting tips on training, and it's not about anything that you possibly should have been doing in the last 6 months or 12 months or 3 months. Today is all about what myself and some other fantastic people that I've had got with me here today, that what we can possibly help get you at a better stage than what you are now, between now and race day tomorrow. I'll soon be introducing some other guests that are with me tonight. We have Derek Clayton, Rob DiCostella, Steve Monteghetti, Lee Troop, and Kieran McCann, but I'll introduce them all one individually in time. So with regards to what I would like to share with you about what you could possibly change between now and tomorrow, I recall when I represented Australia in the 5,000 metres in the New Zealand Commonwealth Games. And I went over to New Zealand as possibly one of the favourites for the race. I just missed out on breaking Ron Clark's Australian 3,000 metre record, and I've beaten basically everyone that I was up against in the field, including Andrew Lloyd, who ended up winning the race, including Yobus Ondieki, who went on to break the world record. Basically, I was in the shape of my life. I was going absolutely fantastic. And a couple of days before the race, they had a database in the village in Auckland there, where you go in the database and look who your competitors were. And so I was nervously looking through who I was up against, you know, wondering how I was going to go. Probably not. For some reason, my confidence as the race was coming closer, my confidence was dying down a little bit. And as I was there, Yobus Ondieki, who was also one of the great runners there, he came up to me and he said, "Well, I don't know what you're doing looking up that database, Pat." And it was only a few years later that I sort of, it clicked that Yobus sort of classed me as possibly being one of the favourites for the race, because I'd beaten these guys over 1,500 metres, beat them over 3K, ran well over 5K, so I went there as one of the favourites. But somehow, in the last 3 days, 2 days, 1 day before the race, my confidence started going like this. And I think it's not dissimilar to a lot of people when they train for an event. When you're 3 months out, when you're 2 months out, when you're 1 month out, you're thinking, yes, I can do this. It's going to be bloody easy, isn't it? Piece of cake. Hey, Claire. Piece of cake. And then as the days get a little bit closer, then the doubts start coming in your mind. You start thinking about it all the time, and you start thinking, gee, am I really going to be able to achieve this as it gets closer? It's like a monster. As it gets closer, in the distance it's not too bad, but as the monster gets closer, you realize how big the monster is. So my advice to everyone here is to take confidence in your training over the last 3 months. Don't think about the negatives. And don't think about the negatives, because it's not really going to achieve anything. Someone came up to me earlier today and said, I've got a sore ITB. Is that going to worry me during the race? Whew. Bugger if I know, mate. But I said, just say some prayers tonight before you go to sleep, mate. Let's hope tomorrow it's all right. But last year, I stayed around to the finish of the Gold Coast Airport Marathon last year. And the last fellow who crossed the line in 7 hours and 58 minutes was a fellow who I called Sumoto, but apparently a Japanese fellow, but apparently his name's pronounced differently, but let's call him Sumoto. Anyway, this guy lost both his legs in a car accident, and he did the whole Gold Coast Airport Marathon last year with no legs, just on crutches. And I stayed behind, and there was probably about 25 of us who stayed behind to cheer Sumoto across the line. And when Sumoto came across, it was an emotional moment, and lots of people were crying, and I wasn't, because I'm a bit of a cold sort of a character. But lots of people were emotionally, I guess, affected by this fellow who had travelled the 42.2 kilometres, and I don't believe he's here with us this year, but travelled the 42.2 kilometres on crutches, which is absolutely unbelievable. I think that's what is fantastic about tomorrow, 10K, half marathon or marathon. Everyone can experience the exact same feeling that Sumoto experienced last year. Lee Troop, if he wins the race, or whoever wins the race, the marathon, whoever wins the 10K, whoever wins a half marathon, whoever breaks 4 hours for the first time, whoever breaks 3 hours, 2 hours, an hour and a half. I deal with people every day of my life now through my online coaching and Brisbane Running Group, and it makes me aware, ladies and gentlemen, that there is absolutely, I can guarantee, absolutely no difference between winning the Gold Coast Airport Marathon and breaking 3 hours for the first time, because I've done them both here, okay? And to be honest, and I guess I'm not a cold sort of a coat, because I can remember when I ran 2 hours 48 here in my first marathon, I did actually have tears of emotion as I crossed the line, and I didn't when the times that I won here. So I wish you all the best for tomorrow, and I certainly hope that you achieve everything that you wish to achieve, and I hope that it certainly race unfolds the way you wish it to. I'm going to introduce some other people here, and the next gentleman I would like to introduce you to is a man who has held the world record for the marathon, ladies and gentlemen, not on one occasion, but on two occasions. He ran first world record in 1967, and he ran 2:09, I'm going to get his times wrong here, but 2:09.38, I think. 2 years later, he broke that world record, ladies and gentlemen, in Antwerp, where he ran 2:08.33. Would you please welcome Mr. Derek Clayton. And what's even better than that, ladies and gentlemen, is even though he's got a slight accent, Derek Clayton is an Aussie, although I'm not quite sure, because you'd tell me a story about that one time, Derek. But he is an Australian, ladies and gentlemen. Derek, it's fantastic to have you here on the coast. You were an extremely aggressive runner in your time, you know, trying to break the world record. When you ran your world record the first time, you knocked over 2.5 minutes off the world record. What is it like on the eve of an event where you know that you're going to go somewhere where no man's been before?
Well, I guess that's what I trained for, actually, Pat. You know, to run a decent marathon, you've got to do a lot of hard work. As most of you guys in the audience would know, it's all relative. And I sort of undertook a pretty strict training regime. I figured that if I wanted to be the best in the world, to run a pretty fast sort of a time, I was going to have to do a lot of training and train pretty damn hard, because it's like anything else in life here. You only get out of it what you put into it, and marathon running is no different. So for me, the evening of my big record attempt was pretty exciting, because I'd got there injury-free. As you all know, when you're pushing it, you're walking a fine line between being in the best shape of your life and being injured. And so for me to get to a stage where I wasn't injured, I was delighted. So I was kind of looking forward to it like a young child looks forward to Christmas. And I couldn't wait to get into it. And then the next thing, of course, when you're running a marathon, there's nothing worse than getting to the first 10 or 15 mile mark and finding, shit, I'm not feeling too good here. And you've got another 15 or 20 miles to go. It's not a great feeling. But in my case, when I run both my... Well, when I ran my 2:09.33 in Japan, that was a bit of a surprise, I've got to tell you, because unlike my 2:08.33 that I ran, that was a world record attempt, and I was really going for it. But the 2:09.36 that I ran in Japan, I was just a guy training for the 5 and 10,000 metres, and I ran a marathon for fun and ended up winning it and ended up getting selected to go and represent Australia at the Fukuoka Marathon. And so when I got there, I figured, well, what am I doing here? I'm not really a marathon like these other guys are. So all I was attempting to do was try to finish in the first 10, actually. I figured if I could get in the first 10, I'd be doing real good. And so I started off and just thought I'd hang in there and see if I could hang on as long as I could. And I was hanging in there. When the 15 miles gone, I was on my own. So I figured, well, I might as well just keep going. And that's exactly what I did. I just kept going and ended up winning it and running the fastest time in the world, and first guy ever to break 2:10 and knock 2.5-3 minutes off the world record. And look, I didn't really believe it, because what happened was, at the end, everyone was going crazy. There must have been about 10,000 people in this small stadium in Fukuoka, and when I'd finished, everyone's dancing up and down and excited, and I thought, gee whiz, they're all obviously pretty happy for me. And I had this Japanese interpreter. And he comes up to me afterwards, and he can't speak. He can't get the words out. He's got this piece of paper on it. and on the piece of paper was written 209.36. And I looked at it and I thought, wow, well, he means two, he's got his figures wrong, it's 219.36. And I thought I'd won, because I was delighted I'd won the race. I wasn't thinking for one second that I'd run that fast, so I thought I'd won the race in 219. And it took about 5 or 10 minutes after that I was convinced I ran such an incredible time. So it kind of came a little bit unexpected to me. And then, of course, a couple of years later, I figured, well, if I can do 2:09:36, I think I can do it a little bit better than this. So I started really training hard. And because back in those days, we didn't have much money, you know, and there wasn't that many marathons to run, unlike today, where you've got so many marathons you can run here in Australia and virtually all over the world. And I didn't have too many opportunities. So this opportunity came up in Belgium, where I was told the conditions would be pretty good, nice and cool. We all want nice, cool weather to run marathons, especially to run a fast one. And of course, they could only afford to pay me so much. So I had to accept a run in Turkey, and they were going to help to pay the airfare. And so I had this. I decided to run this marathon 10 days before my world record attempt in Turkey. And I said, look, I want this as a warm-up. You're not going to have anybody good there, are you? Because I want a nice, easy run as a warm-up for this world record attempt in 10 days' time. And I get there, and the last minute, the two Turkish champions suddenly decides he wants to have a go at me. And then the guy that came second to him, the second Turk, decides he wants to have a go at me as well. So I ended up running this race, and it was at 8,000-foot altitude in a place called Ankara in Turkey. And I won the race in 2:17. But 2:17, I had to run that because these two Turks were giving me a pretty tough time. And 2:17 at that altitude was pretty quick. And I wasn't feeling too good after it. And so I had 10 days recovery before I funded up to run what I thought, well, I was going for a 2:07 marathon, actually. That's what I really had in the back of my mind. And it was pretty tough. Believe me, when I ran that world record 2:08:33, it wasn't easy because I probably wasn't as fresh as what I could have been. But anyway, I ran 2:08:33 and I was able to beat my existing world record. And as I say, you've got to take your opportunity when you can get them, because back in those days, there wasn't too many marathons.
Thank you, Derek. Derek Clayton, Mr. Ladies and Gentlemen. Sit down here, mate. It's interesting to note that last night we had a dinner where they celebrated the gathering of the five of us, the 210 marathoners of Australia of all time, never been together. So we had a dinner last night, which was fantastic. While we're sitting there talking about the statistics, and we looked back at the last 40 years, the history of the marathon world record in the last 40 years, there was only two countries, ladies and gentlemen, in the last 40 years that have held the record. Sorry, it's only one country. I think I was wrong last night. One country who has held the record, world record, more than once. I'll get this right. There's only one country who's held the world record more than once. That's Australia. Would you please welcome Australia's other previous world record holder for the marathon, Mr. Rob DiCostella. Rob DiCostella ran 2:08:13, ladies and gentlemen, to break Terry Clayton's world record in Fukuoka, Japan in 1981. Rob, looking back at your career, I followed your career, and I think back to 1984. You were one of the favourites going into the LA Olympics, and I also can recall after the Olympics where you thought that possibly the pressure of being one of the favourites got the better of you. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's probably pretty close to the mark, Pat. I mean, 84 was a big year for me. I'd won the Commonwealth Games in 82. Won the World Championships in 83, won the Rotterdam Marathon against Carlos Lopez and Alberto in 83 as well. So, you know, sort of internationally, there was a lot of expectation that the 84 Olympics was going to be a good run for me as well. I ended up finishing fifth, and I think, you know, sort of with the benefit of hindsight, I can see now the mistake that I made. And you know, what I did was I just sort of got carried away with my training. I'd been running so well in the 3 years leading up to it, and I thought, well, you know, this is the Olympics. You know, all the other stuff was really just a lead up to the Olympics. So the Olympics is what it's all about. So I'm going to get out there and train even harder. And as a result, I overdid it and ran myself into a hole. As it turned out, I was sort of even lucky just to make the Australian team. I was really struggling when we had our qualifying races and just managed to get onto the team. And I think I was really probably lucky to finish fifth in hindsight. And it taught me a very important lesson, which is if things are going well, don't get carried away. Just be patient. My great coach Pat Clohessy had a saying. He said, "Look, the training that we are doing, it may not be the best training program in the world, but at least we know it works. So just get out there and stick with it. Don't always try to find something bigger and better, and just be patient and hang in there, and just let those sessions build up your fitness and your strength." So I certainly learned a lot about just not getting too carried away. This session this afternoon is really just to give you guys, I guess, a bit of confidence to know that the preparation that you've had, whether it's running 200 kilometres a week or whether it's running 20 kilometres a week, sort of all of that hard work is behind you now. This is the final countdown to the gun going off. And really what you just have to do is build on the background, build on the fitness, build on the strength that you've built into your legs, and just have the confidence to know that that's going to be enough to get you to the finish line. When the gun goes, you have to hold yourself back a little bit. The marathon doesn't start until about halfway. And the real business end of the marathon isn't until you get to about 35, 32K. So, 10K to go is really where you really want to be starting to focus and concentrate. When you're out there running 42K, it's almost impossible to maintain a really focused, intense concentration for that period of time. So I think it's important in that first half just to relax, just to have a bit of a look around, have a bit of a chat to some of the people around you, to see if you can find a couple of runners who are trying to run a similar sort of time to what you've set yourself, and introduce yourself. And what you'll find is that when you do get to that tough section, and you can guarantee in a marathon it's gonna come. The marathon is really about preparing yourself for when the going gets tough. When you do get to that stage where the going gets tough, hopefully you've got a couple of people around you and you can support each other and help each other to get through to the finish line. It's a great event, the marathon. I like to say it's not just an event. It's a way of life. You find out more about yourself when you go out there and you run your marathon than many other things that you'll experience, because it takes you way outside your comfort zone. It takes you some place where you really have to draw deep inside yourself to be able to rise above. And it's that opportunity to go outside your comfort zone that allows you as a person to grow and develop. So hopefully you're well prepared. These final few hours is really about just keeping relaxed, making sure that you get adequate water and hydration. Don't overdo it. You can wreck yourself by trying to drink too much. So just make sure you're drinking a little bit to be well hydrated before you get to the start line. As the race unfolds, try to settle into a comfortable rhythm in the early stages. Like I said, see if you can find someone around that you can have a bit of a chat to. And hopefully, you can work together with some of the other runners out there, because the great thing about the marathon is that we share a wonderful camaraderie with every other runner that's out on the course. It doesn't matter whether someone's running, sort of 2 hours 10 or faster, or someone's out there running their first marathon and just wants to make it to the finish line in 4 hours or more. We all cover the same 42.195 kilometres, and we have a wonderful connection and a sense of camaraderie with all of you. So I wish you all the best. I'm sure it's going to be a great day. I mean, the weather's been very, very kind. Those that are running the full marathon, be conservative in the early stages. those that are running the half marathon and the 10K and the other events, just really enjoy it and see if you can get down to the finish line and give the marathon runners a bit of a cheer over the, those last 5 or 10Ks because they will be going through a little bit of hurt out there.
Thank you. Mr. Rob DiCostello, ladies and gentlemen. And we are talking about world records, ladies and gentlemen. We, here at the moment, we have sitting here, we have two prior world record holders for the marathon. We also have a gentleman with us today for three times, ladies and gentlemen. Three times he held the world record for the half marathon. In man who needs little introduction, would you please welcome Mr. Steve Monteghetti, man who's represented Australia at 4 Olympics. He's going to run a medal, a gold, silver, and bronze in the marathon at the Commonwealth Games. Bronze medalist at the World Championships in Athens. And the list goes on. I'll be here forever and a day, mate, but these people got to get home, so we better keep it short. Steve, you've had a fantastic career on the eve. You had some great races. Was there any times when you you thought... I remember I spoke to you once, and I talked to you once about pressure, and pressure when you run on home soil and pressure when you ran internationally. And I think you told me that you felt more pressure when you ran internationally than when you did domestic, and I, for some reason I was vice versa. Would that be... Was that true?
Oh, yeah, probably. I think I feel quite relaxed here, and I'm a pretty sort of local homebody person, and when I run here I feel comfortable because I feel like there's people around me who know me and respect me, whereas internationally you're under pressure to probably perform with the big boys. And I never really considered myself a great athlete, and I always found, you know, there's all these superstars around and what am I doing here? So I always felt like I had to justify my position in the international field. So, you know, I think that served me pretty well. I'm really big on you know, when you're an underdog, it's a very dangerous position because you've got no pressure or expectation. And, you know, just recently we saw it with the Socceroos where, you know, they performed so well and they were getting people and taking them by surprise because they're off guard. They think in Australia they can't play soccer, you know, we don't have to worry about them. So I always like that underdog attitude because, you know, I think it puts a pressure on other people and you can focus on doing what you do best. And, you know, if you scare a few people, then that's good. So I always play it low-key, let your legs do the talking and tell everybody about what you did after the race rather than before what you're going to do, and it worked very well for me.
So let's imagine that sitting there amongst all these great people, there's at least one individual whose preparation has gone absolutely fantastic. They've done all their long training runs. They haven't had any injuries, and you know they've been talking to their friends during the week that you know I'm going to break 4 hours tomorrow for the marathon. But they've woken up this morning, and all of a sudden they're scared out of their wits. What have you got to say to that person?
I'd like to say I ran 22 marathons, and that's the exact scenario for every one of them. So I had a great capacity to get to the start line in great shape, and that gave me fantastic confidence. But it doesn't mean I wasn't nervous the day before. I hate this. This time right now is the worst time for a runner, I reckon. The day before, you know, you want the event to come on. You want to be able to get out there because at the moment we're not ticking off any of the event that we've prepared so long for. So I find this the most difficult time because you can't have any impact on the race. So I really don't like today. Don't sleep at all tonight. You know, we have the theory and it was great. We had a dinner last night and just as we're leaving, Troopy went to bed a bit earlier than us and Rob said to him, make sure you get to bed early tonight. You know, the night before is the most important night, which is one of my great theories. So it was great to hear it. I didn't need to tell Troopy because Deke told him. So it was came from the legend rather than just his coach. And so that is the most important thing. If you're caught up on all your sleep, you've done all your drink, you know, you're hydrated, you've had carbohydrates for the last couple of weeks, today means very, very little about the result. And I used to get on the start line, seriously, before the gun would go, I'd say, well, I know I'm going to have a good race because my preparation has been to the letter and I've done everything right. So what happens in the race just looks after itself. So it's not what happens today. It's not what happens a couple of hours before the race tomorrow. It's not what happened when you're on the start line. It's what you've done for the last, you know, for us, 20 years, for you guys, some that many, for some maybe a few months, and you'll get the result. That's what I love about this event. You get out of it what you put in, and we all know what we should run, and for most of us that will happen tomorrow.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Steve Monteghetti. I know there was one, actually I made a number of teams with Steve, and there's one thing that we used to always, well, not always do, but often get up to maybe some hijinks or whatever, like little kids before the events. Remember one time, just a quick story, Antwerp half marathon world championships in 19 whatever, it was in this last decade anyway, somewhere there, and there was this guy Trevor Miller, first team away, and we were flying away over in the plane, and he said, I've lined up a carton of beer from Foster's, a carton of studies from Foster's. Well, mate, what, don't you think they have beer in Belgium? Belgium's the beer capital of the world, for God's sake. And he's thinking, hey, you've got in touch with Foster's. I'm in this Australian team, mate. You've got to send me a carton of Foster's over to Belgium. So we got to Belgium, and every day he's going to reception. There's a carton of Foster's arrived. There's a carton of Foster's arrived. And he's going, they promised me they'd send a carton of Foster's. And we're down reception one day, and then this package arrives for Trevor Vincent. We go, oh. His Foster's arrived. So we grabbed the slab of Foster's, right? So we put it in our room, put it in the fridge, and he's turned up. Where's the slab of Foster's? And we go down to Trev. Trev, where's the Foster's, mate? You promised the Foster's. Did the race. After the race, he came back to our room. We're all sitting there drinking a Foster's. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce a man who is one of the favourites for the race today. Tomorrow, not today, tomorrow. Would you please welcome Mr. Lee Troop, ladies and gentlemen. Lee is the previous Australian record holder for the 5,000 metres when he broke Ron Clark's Australian record when he ran 13 minutes and 16 seconds. He is a dual Olympian. He's got a PB for the marathon of 209 and 49 seconds. Not quite good enough, mate, but 10 seconds, that's all right. Lee, we won't keep you because you know you've got a big mission on tomorrow. How are you feeling?
No, I'm really looking forward to it. I just said to Karen out the back, I just want to get it over and done with. I mean, this is what I've come here to do. I've come here to run. And, I mean, obviously this is great to be able to talk to you guys and do the dinner that we did last night. But I sort of really see that as the side. It's a part of what I'm here for. I mean, it'd be embarrassing to do all this work and do the race and finish 10th. So I'm up here to win it, win a national title, hopefully run a good time that at least give me a qualifying time straight up for Osaka and then get home and spend the next 6 months of this year actually getting really fit and getting ready to take on the world's best next year.
What goes... Thank you. A big, big cheer for Lee Troop. Let's invent a scenario, Lee. You've got a pacer tomorrow, Steve and Kim Gillard, and halfway they both step off the road, and then you're by yourself. You know you've got 21.1 kilometres of running ahead of you. What is going to keep you going? What is going to keep you to put one foot in front of the other when you know that you're possibly going to start getting tired, you're going to start tightening up a bit? What's going to motivate you to get to the finish line? Is it your family waiting for you to finish? Is it all the training you've done? Is it your desire to make Australian teams? Is it your desire to make yourself back on the world stage, or a mixture of everything?
No, I think the simple thing is this is what I train to do. You know, I spend endless hours, you know, 180 to 200 kilometres a week in, week out, 7,500 kilometres a year to 8,000 kilometres a year. And I said last night, you know, physio once a week and, you know, see a masseur once a week. And, you know, you put in all these hardships week in, week out, and that's what it's all about. So when the race actually starts getting tough, you draw on all the sacrifices that you've had to make to actually get there. You think about all the things that you've had to go without, you know, the simple things of, you know, a friend has a birthday that's 2 hours from home and, you know, it's going to be 2 hours to get there. And you know, you hang around for 2 or 3 hours, or you're not going to get home until after midnight, and you think that the next day you've got your long run. I can't do that. So every single thing that I've done has been for a purpose, and that purpose is actually for tomorrow. So the second half of the race, I'm just going to be thinking about running hard and getting to the finish and getting a good time on the board. And you know, first thing I'll be thinking of is obviously trying to win a national title, and if everything's going well and the pacemakers have done the job and I'm feeling comfortable, the next thing we look at is the time. And you know, I do believe that I can run between 2 hours 10 and 2 hours and 12 minutes, and we know that the course record's 2:10:14, and you know, I don't know whether I'll go close. I mean, I can only control the one thing, and that's myself. We don't know what the weather's going to be like tomorrow, so I'll just get in there and rock and roll. But you know, those little pats on the back, had they been a little bit harder, I might have been gunning to try and run 2:09, was it 39? I have to be look at 2:09:38.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Lee Troop. Okay, so cast your memory back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Commonwealth Games in Melbourne last year, and I think that it's one of those, I hate cliches, I hate bloody cliches, but you always know where you were when JFK passed away. You always know where you were when Rob DiCostello won the 82 Commonwealth Games, but you also know, ladies and gentlemen, where you were when Kieran McCann crossed the line in the Commonwealth Games marathon last year. Would you please welcome Kieran McCann? I still can't get out of my mind the the skip thing you were doing when you were going around the track. It was you wouldn't want to do that. You don't want to do that for us today, do you, Kira? No. You can't remember that. But everyone here wants to... how's it been anyway? What was it like? How's your life changed since you won the Commonwealth Games Marathon for the second time?
Well, it hasn't changed that much. I have been busy. The first 2 months after the Commonwealth Games was really hectic. It's like everyone wants you then and there, but it'd be nice to spread it out for a year. But it's starting to quieten down now, and I'm here this weekend. I'm going to run the 10K tomorrow, and this is what I love about running. Road running, fun runs with a great crowd, and yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I don't want to take away your credibility as a fantastic athlete. Last night we had the top five Australian marathoners of all time, and when I went back to my room, I felt there was a slightly disrespectful. We didn't have the top five women also, but because we did have got the great Lisa Rondiecki, who won a silver medal in the Seoul Olympics, and also yourself, Kieran, a two Commonwealth Games gold medal. So you possibly should have had yourself and Lisa and a few other ladies up there last night also. But what is it like when you are a mother also, and there's a lot of ladies here who juggle, you know, kids and whatever. And what is it like when you run a marathon? And is it sort of difficult to train for it when you've got the kids? And when you do well, is it sort of mean a lot more because you know you had a lot of sort of hard work, sort of having to care for the family and also train at the same time?
It's been really hard. People with kids know how hard it is. I do most of my training really early in the morning. I get up. I come back and my children don't even know that I've been out there for 2 hours running. I'm back in time for breakfast and I do a half an hour run in the afternoon. And I was sitting on the lounge the other day and my son wanted me to get up and get him a drink. And I said, no, get it up yourself. He told me I was so lazy, but he doesn't know the training that I do. But you know, I've had races. I ran a race in New York last year and I needed to get some sleep the night before, so I put my daughter in with my husband and, you know, she can sleep with you for the night because I need a good night's sleep tonight. I'm running New York Marathon the next morning. But, of course, she wanted mum, so she screamed and cried and wanted a mummy. In the end, I got up about 11:30 at night, went in, rocked her to sleep, put her back to bed, went back to bed. I got up in the morning, I ran a great marathon. So, I mean, how do you explain it? I think when you love to do something so much, you just do it. You don't think about how hard it is. You just get up there and do it. And, you know, I've done several training sessions, several long runs off 3 hours sleep. But, I just do it. And I suppose you make up for the rest later.
And going back to the Commonwealth Games Marathon, in the end there, when you had that ding-dong battle with Helen Chirono from Kenya, what sort of drove you? Obviously, she came over the top of you, and obviously you would have been feeling tired. And were you, can you recall at that point in time whether you were going through a lot of fatigue, whether you're going through a lot of pain, or was it more like a numb feeling and you thought, no, I'm not going to let her beat me, and your sort of desire to win the race sort of overrode all the fatigue you were going through? Or do you recall that it was a rather horrific time for you at the finish there?
It was pretty tough, and, you know, I've spoken to people later and they said, oh, we were watching the race and we didn't even know that you were going to win. And I'm like, well, I didn't know either. You know, we ran the last probably kilometre. I spoke to my manager and coach beforehand and they kept drumming it into me that I'm so much better than the rest of the field. And I led from, you know, well out because I just kept thinking that she would drop off at any moment. But yeah, she never did, and I was just trying to keep myself relaxed, but there was a hill towards the end, and I thought, right, I'm really good at hills, I'm going to get her on this hill, and she did drop off a bit because I couldn't hear her breathing on my shoulder. We've come around the other side, and she's come past me again, and I must admit it was in that point there that I really thought that she had me. I thought, you know, silver medal's still a great effort, but she didn't actually take off, and I've come at her again. I thought, I'm going to just give her one last go. I've come past, and I heard the roar of the crowd before we entered the stadium, and I just got this huge buzz. We've got to the just before the tunnel. I think she passed me again. I passed her inside the tunnel. I kept saying to myself, get out, you know, first and let the crowd do the rest. So I passed her inside the tunnel. I come out ahead of her, shot to the inside lane, and, yeah, that... From then on, that was numb. I didn't feel a thing. I was in a lot of pain, you know, the last 2 kilometres, as you always are. But, yeah, I got into that stadium. I never felt anything. And I ran a great last 300 metres. And I've never, ever done that before in a marathon.
But I can still... Kieran McCann, ladies and gentlemen. Kieran, I haven't finished. Kieran, no, sorry. That was one more question to you. Getting back to when you did finish and you did that lap, I being a former athlete myself, I could very much, I guess, I think I felt 100% what you were experiencing, that amazing sort of feeling. And when that feeling that I guess that you get when you do well, I often liken it to the old saying that you have, that it feels like all your Christmases and birthdays have come at once. It's just an absolutely special feeling. And I think what's great about the Gold Coast Airport Marathon, the 10K, the half marathon, the marathon, is that everyone tomorrow, when they cross the line, they can experience the very same feeling you experienced on that lap of the track in Melbourne. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. I think a marathon, it's such a long way and you're in so much pain. And I think, you know, when you've crossed that line, it's just like you feel like you've achieved, you know, all the training that you've done, you've achieved it, you've done it. And, you know, that's something that everyone can experience. It's such hard work. You're out there for, you know, somewhere between 2.5, 3, 4 hours, but when you cross that line, it's just such a great feeling of achievement. And so good luck to everyone. I hope you run well. I'll be out there watching, but it's so good up here too, because there's so much atmosphere, there's so much support along the way, so it's a really great marathon. So enjoy yourselves,
ladies and gentlemen. For the second time, Kieran McCann. Okay, I do believe there is someone with a roaming mic. Is that right? Down here, I'll give this mic down to someone. So we're going to throw the floor open, ladies and gentlemen. Bearing in mind that we don't want to keep you all afternoon, we don't want to keep these great people all afternoon either. But if anyone has any questions that they would like to put forward, then we are all more than welcome to answer your questions. Please don't be shy. But please, there is only one rule. One rule, and the questions cannot be diet-related that you should have done in the last 6 months or training-related. Please don't ask about altitude training, okay, because it's a bloody long drive if you're going to go somewhere from altitude from here, between here and tomorrow. Other than that, you're more than welcome to pose a question. Thank you.
To Mr. Derek Clayton, finally get to see you in the flesh. This is a great honour, sir. I believe you ran your 2 world records dry. In other words, you didn't have any water on the course. Do you consider today's athletes soft?
Absolutely. look, you're not. It wasn't there was drink stations, but we only had those plastic cups back in those days. And you guys, if you've ever tried to run a marathon, especially the speed that I ran them at, and you try to get a drink out of a cup, it's almost impossible. So in fact, there was water on the course, but you're dead right. I did run dry.
Sorry, just on that, I had a bad experience in Barcelona in 1992, and my next marathon in 93 in Tokyo, I decided, because I was dehydrated and I got a bit upset in my stomach, to have no fluid. So I ran that marathon in 1993 with just a couple of cups thrown over my head for the whole race, and was blowing a goal. I ran second behind a BB Mekinen, and we ran 2:12. It was probably as good as I could have ran on the day, and I didn't have anything to drink, so... You know, I think sometimes I was getting overhydrated during the race because I was drinking so much. Now, I'm not saying that's a good thing to do, but if you're very, very hydrated beforehand, wasn't hot up there, so different circumstances to here tomorrow, then, you know, you don't need to drink a lot along the way, and obviously it's difficult to get a lot out of cups anyway, so... You know, I think if you're getting on, if you're really hydrated before the race, you don't need that much during the race anyway, if you're a person like me.
Does anybody else have any questions? Put your hands up. We've got a couple of roaming mics going around, so by all means, just grab the mic and fire away. Thank you.
Hi, Kerry. My question's for you. I was in England to see you at your first gold medal, and in the stadium for your second one. You were such an inspiration to women in Australia and overseas, and I just wonder, you've achieved so much. What are your goals for the future now?
Good question. I'm going to keep myself going. I'm not doing the marathon training at the moment. I've decided I was going to run New York in November, but I've changed my mind now. I want to enjoy it for the next 6 months towards the end of the year, run these races, 10K races, which I love running fun runs, possibly the City to Surf, and then after Christmas I'll get back into it and run a marathon maybe towards the end of next year.
Anyone else have a question? Please just put your hand up.
This one to Deke in 82, up the road there, when Jahuma Rakanga and Chahanga got out in front there, I think it was something like 500 metres or so, maybe more. Did you make the decision on that moment to say, oh, they're going too quick, I can't keep up, I'll let them go and hope they come back, or did you have a plan in mind?
Pat and I had certainly discussed the tactics that we were going to use beforehand. The race started at 6 a.m. and it was, you know, we knew it was going to be fairly warm. The Commonwealth Games, I can't remember exactly what month it was, but it certainly, you know, wasn't like this. It was considerably hotter than what it is at the moment. And when the two Tanzanians took off at the gun and were running so fast, you know, I thought that they were just a bit crazy. You know, I thought that it was virtually impossible to maintain that sort of pace in those sorts of conditions. And you know, I really decided to hold myself back. Having said that, at halfway, I had no idea that they would have been so far in front. You know, I thought that, oh, you know, I'll hold myself back and I'll still keep them in sight, but they had just cleared out and had really no idea where they were. And it wasn't until halfway when I saw Pat Clohessy on the side of the road on the course, and you know, he was really concerned because I was so far back, that I decided I had to make a break, and I broke away from the other runners in the pack and went out and chased them down. And at that stage, I didn't know whether I was going to catch them or not. But, you know, I just knew that I still had a lot of running left in my legs, and I was going to give it my best shot. You know, fortunately, I was eventually able to see, first of all, Chahanga in the distance and then pull him in. And there's nothing more that fires you up like finishing on a roll. You know, if you can get yourself up and over and you're actually passing people over that last 10K, and this is one of the reasons why I said before, you know, it's really, you know, I think really important to be a bit conservative in the early stages, especially when you know the conditions are going to be warming up over that last, you know, hour or so. If you can feel as though you're full of running and you're actually passing people in those closing stages, it gives you a real boost, and that's what I felt back in 82. You know, I was pulling him in. All I knew I had to do was maintain the same rhythm and the same pace. And even though we passed each other a few times, I was just running the same pace, the same constant pace. And it was a Kanga who was surging to get in front, and then I'd eventually pass him again, then he'd surge again. So he was working a lot harder than I was, and you know, I was just finishing on strong.
Any more questions? Thanks.
Open question. Will the world marathon record ever get sub 2 hours?
2 hours?
Yeah.
My response is I remember I ran 60:34 for a half marathon. 2 weeks later, I ran 2:08. So I double your half marathon, add about 7 minutes on. And Gebre Selassie ran about 58.5, I think, just recently. So if you double that and add 7 minutes, he can run about 2 hours too. So I think, you know, he's certainly taking it down. We need someone who can run like him over 5 and 10K, who then steps out to the half marathon, runs about 56.5 minutes, and it'll happen. But until then, it's probably not likely. So you know, you got the guys here. Derek Clayton ran 2:08:33. In 1969. So you know, in what's that? Almost 40 years. It's only improved 4 minutes, less than 4 minutes. So we've got to take another five off to get under 2 hours. So it'll probably take another, you know, 20 or 30 years before we do it. So it might not be in our running lifetime, but it will happen because people improve, and you're seeing advantages now. Derek, we could spend hours with Derek. Derek wore shoes like Deke's got on, his casual shoes now. I think he tells the story. Were they Dunlop Volleys, weren't they, mate? So, you know, we've had some progressions along the way that make it a lot easier for us. So, you know, obviously those things are going to help.
Look, I think a two-hour marathon will be done. I've got no doubt about that. Just alluding to what Steve just said, back when I was running, they reckon that 2:10 wasn't possible. Well, I showed that was possible in the worst shoes possible. So, look, I've got no doubt that 2 hours will be done. Will it be done in my lifetime or not remains to be seen, but as athletes are becoming more talented and you're getting a lot more... Look, when I ran, it was usually guys ran like me who weren't good enough to run fast enough on the track. Like, I would have never run a marathon if I could have been a good 1,500-metre runner. But these days, that's all changing. You're getting some class athletes who are now taking on the marathon. And with the technology of shoes, and that certainly does help, and diet, and et cetera, it will be done. It's just a question of when.
Yeah. Question to Steve. While you're up here, mate, we were wondering whether you're going to take on one of the Brisbane trains.
Yeah, like, you know, I wasn't having a go at any of the Sydney State or the New South Wales State transport system. Someone was going to run against the train, and it just happened to be me. It could have been any of us. I was just, don't shoot me, I was just the messenger. You know, I think, you know, when we picked, the guy picked four stations that were close together and that he knew I had a chance of doing it. You just do it. Do it to your own ability. I would have got blown away had someone said, you're racing a train, because obviously I can't beat a train. But he told me that it was going to pull, by the time pulled into the station and pulled into the next station four stations down, I had 8 minutes, and I knew it was 2.4K, so I ran 7 minutes and 7 seconds. So I knew if I ran under 8 minutes, I was going to get there and the train would still be there, which was exactly the case. So it wasn't like I saw it as running against a train. It was setting a challenge to run that distance in under 8 minutes, and I think that's how we should approach things. If you make them relative to your own ability, then, you know, it's a challenge for you, and you're up to the task. So, you know, I just saw it as a different challenge, and no disrespect, I hope I still get back into New South Wales and might not be letting me in this state. I don't think that's why I'm in Queensland, so I'm not allowed in New South Wales. So I'm not saying anything about the public transport up here, or I'll be on my way.
Thanks, Steve. That was a bit of a serious answer to a silly question, but a serious question. You're the official starter for City to Surf this year. We're going to have you come back and race it again, though.
No, I think that's a way of stopping me running. I'm a gathering. They told me not to run. I was happy to run, but yeah, they asked me to be the celebrity start, and that's an honour, you know. And I think I'm then going to commentate. So, you know, I'd like to see an Australian win it. And I've enjoyed running the last couple of years, and in a different way. But, you know, it's really time for these younger guys to step up, and I'm sure we're going to get an Australian winner. So, Troopy was the last one in 1997, and that's, you know, that's just too long. So we need to encourage people, and that's what I love about this, the Gold Coast event here, is they really encourage Australian athletes. And you know, your support out on the course, the fact we're all here doing this, is good incentive to Australian athletes. And, you know, the City to Surf, I'm pretty confident this year we will have an Australian winner, and I look forward to calling that person over the line. And we certainly will in the women's, won't we, Karen? Anyway, we'll get a female winner anyway. So it is a great event, and a number of you, I'm sure, would look to run it. It's one of Australia's icon events, and like here, it's more than just a run. It's a great community event, and you get to share a lot of stories. We've all been able to run up there, and, you know, I think we've all won it. Derek, did they have the City to Surf when you were running? No, it started in 73 or 4. Right. So actually, we've got everyone here's won it except that's run it, I think, haven't we? Pat? Except for Pat. Sorry, I'll hand the microphone back. That's why you're coming to your MC.
Well, mate, when you broke the course record, I was only 35-odd seconds behind you. I remember when your first comments was, I should have won by more. And I was the second guy. I think, well, what about me? I just ran the bloody race of my life, and he thinks you should have beaten me by more. But not to worry.
Pat, just very quickly, from all the running gurus up on the stage, who's going to go 1-2-3 tomorrow?
Ah, in the marathon?
In the marathon.
In the marathon? It's really difficult in a marathon, I think, to pick a winner. I don't want to put any pressure on my mate here, Troopy, but...
Who does Troopy see as his competition tomorrow?
Yeah, I'll ask him that in a second. But what you got to realise in a marathon, and people can go from 2 hours 14 as their PB to 2:10 in one race. Okay, so just because there are a number of guys in the event tomorrow who have a PB of 2 hours and 13 minutes, Troopy's got a best of 2 hours and 9, but those guys 2:13. There's no reason why they can't run 2:10 or 2:11 tomorrow. So there's about a half dozen guys like that. But Lee, who's going to win tomorrow, mate?
Obviously, I would like to win. The competition's going to come from... there's a couple of New Zealanders that have come over here. So Dale Warrender, Craig Kirkwood, Matt Travatsky. They're all 2:13 guys. And Scott Winton, who finished 17th at the World Championships in 2005. And we've got Rod de Heiden that went to two Olympic Games with a personal best of 2:13.54. You know, so that's... And Gamuchu, who won it in 2004, I think. So, you know, as Pat said, despite the fact that, you know, on times, you know, you could say that I'm the clear favourite by 4 minutes, the beauty about the marathon is anything can happen. I've seen guys in the best shape of their life turn out and run 2:30, and I've seen guys not in great shape, you know, still run 2:10. So the only thing I can control is myself, and, you know, as I said last night, I'm not here to play around. I could have probably taken the easy option of just coming up and just running a nice tactical race, and I think we all would have been happy to have run 2:13, 2:15, and whoever was the best guy to kick home over the last 3K would win. But I've got everything to lose by running the way that I'm running tomorrow. I'm going to go out there and run hard. And all these guys, as I class as my forefathers, have all gone out there and done it. There's no secret. You know, there's no science to running. We've overcomplicated things over the years gone by. So I'll go out there and have a crack. And if everything goes well, I should win. And if I don't, well, then obviously whoever was able to run the best tactical race coming from behind will obviously come over the top of me and beat me. So we don't know. It's a game of cat and mouse. So we'll see what happens.
Any other questions? Any more questions, ladies and gentlemen, before I close today's seminar? I think what's really important to realise, ladies and gentlemen, is it's sometimes important to stop and smell the roses and appreciate what's been handed to you. It's a fact that you can have people like Derek and Deke and Mona and Troopy and Kieran and maybe even myself on the stage here on the eve of the Gold Coast Airport Marathon. I think it's a great thing, and I think you should put your hands together for the Gold Coast Airport Marathon. For going to the effort to get us all together and to encourage you all tomorrow. So I hope sincerely that if you came here today feeling a little bit apprehensive about what's going to take place tomorrow, that by the time you get off your chairs and turn around, that you're thinking pretty good about this, you're feeling excited, and you're going to look upon tomorrow as an opportunity that you're only going to be on this planet once, ladies and gentlemen, and tomorrow is your opportunity to achieve something, and I certainly wish you all the best. Thank you.